Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, July 30th, 2018, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 174.
Whoa!
Joining me today, all in the studio today. It's a classic full studio podcast. This is the way podcasts are meant to be.
This is right. Cool.
That's how
Natalie is like.
Full NPR.
No, I don't know. This is something else.
Hello, welcome.
It's like old NPR.
Waypoint
Radio. Early 90s. Like,
oh, I don't think anyone's ever smiled this much at NPR.
It's true.
Except for when they're giving away tote bags.
She's giving away a tote bag.
Danielle Riendo here on my left.
Hi, how are you today? I want a tote bag.
It's Monday. Do you have a tote bag for us, Natalie Watson?
No, I do not, actually. What I can offer is friendship.
Oh, okay. That's
like a, it's like a tote bag for your soul.
I don't know,
friendship and smells?
Smiles.
Smiles. Smells.
Not smells not that smells. I... wore deodorant today, so hopefully not smells.
Those are good smells.
And that is also the voice of Ricardo Contreras, a.k.a. Cotto.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good.
You and Natalie are probably coming down still from the hype that was Overwatch League Finals weekend.
The high.
Yes.
Were you not high
the
on...
The amped up
I was high
nature.
On Overwatch.
On Overwatch. Doesn't work that well.
Doesn't work.
They had these sections where they would amp it up. And
what's that mean?
It just meant everyone needed to get loud. Get
hype! When you have the crowd meter at like a sports game and they're like, let's pump it up!
But right, this is amp it up.
There. I gotcha. Yeah.
Right? And because the ultimates, meter fills up. You gotta amp up the ultimate meter so you can use... It's all video games but sports.
Yeah.
So how was it? Let's put aside the jokes around esports. I'm genuinely curious. Did y'all have a good time? What was the experience like? Tell us about... I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to pretend I saw nothing. Because really all I saw was DJ Khaled, trying to overwatch me.
I got thoughts.
Overwatch me. And then he did, a bad,
I got thoughts.
Step.
Yeah, I got thoughts on DJ Khaled. But first I'll begin by my arrival.
This is a whole thing.
Arrival league.
Me and Joel went down... to Barclays together, and I met up with Joel. Went to go be Joel and be Mr. Businessman, and I met up with my boyfriend. And as you all know, when I was at E3, I was all about the photo ops. I was all about the free swag and my
the vaping opportunities.
Very important.
Yes, the vape ops.
Yeah,
photo ops. Vape ops, swag ops.
Yeah,
that's a new call.
Swap, yeah. Pops and
vops.
Good. Those are the three.
Those are the three big ones.
Yeah. So my boyfriend took the rein on this one though, and had us do a 360
no scope
photo op
fop,
as also known as, and it was very embarrassing but very fun. That being said...
Wait, what is a 360
fop?
Yeah,
I need to
hear this. What's a
360
photo op? 360 fop. I know what a fop is, obviously.
A 360 is... when you see a circle...
That's already established a bit. This is a new... What's a photo? What's a 360 photo op?
So in a circle, there are 360 degrees. And then when you rotate, all the degrees are captured.
So it's like a rotating platform.
Yeah, so basically there's a rotating circle.
This is making it sound less and less impressive.
So basically, you're standing on this rotating circle, and they record you and make a GIF out of it. And a lot of people were doing little Overwatch emotes for it. It was very cute.
What was your pose?
At first, I was going to do the diva selfie peace sign because saw a girl do it right before me.
Yeah.
And then...
And you were wearing your diva jacket.
I was wearing my very cool diva bomber jacket.
So good.
Varsity jacket. And then I sort of re-entered my body and was like, I'm absolutely not fucking doing this. Uh-huh. So I just like went for like a chiller peace sign without the selfie cam. But it was very funny. And like that's to say that like the atmosphere at the tournament was really cool. It was just super good vibes. It was like the best parts about going to a sports game and like feeling like, oh, yeah, we're all here rooting for a team together. Like we're all bonding over this thing. And it was surprising to see that like the crowd was like evenly split between London Spitfire and Philadelphia Fusion.
Yeah, you would think the Fusion fans would have really shown up because Philly's so close.
Yeah, I mean they definitely did show up. And like but that's to say that like the both teams were like equally loud, like their fans were equally loud. Like people weren't, it was less sort of like I'm from Philly, I love, you know, Philadelphia. It was like, I love these people on this specific team because no one on the, like, for the most part, like the people on the teams aren't actually from the places.
Oh, right,
and so
right.
Their followings are based on the personalities or the talent themselves, which is kind of a cool thing that like, you know, people have like this predetermined like investment in specific players, and it was cool to see.
It's like how soccer works kind of, right?
Yeah,
like a lot of soccer players don't usually play where they live, like the best ones go over to Britain and are in like the I don't know what the league is and the all that, but like league,
yeah. So that was really cool. And just like how, like, somebody asked me on Twitter, like, was the crowd actually that loud because they were watching on Twitch, and it actually that loud.
Yeah.
Like everyone, like every, you know, like every death, every ultimate, everything, like people were just getting so hyped and like loud, but like best way. Like it wasn't like people were like vying for attention in the sort of like in the sports sort of thing where people like to kind of you know, be that sports person, where that sports guy that is just like loud and like taunting and things like that. It was like very like such like a more wholesome like take on that, which was like very nice to be in. So
cool.
Yeah.
I had a pretty different experience because I went as press, technically.
Oh, right.
I got a press pass, so I got to do that for the first time ever, which was really interesting to just kind of see behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a little room with some food, some very bad Asian chicken.
True, that is definitely.
All right. Yeah. Oh, my God. And they overbooked press.
That doesn't sound wrong.
There was not any.
Wait, what was the press experience like? So you went Friday night and Saturday?
Yeah, I went both days. And so I went in, got my press badge, and they escorted me by. I saw Joel and Natalie for a second, but I was like, hey, hi. But
I'm
being.
I'm press.
Well, but I was just.
I
didn't want to.
There are some bad Asian chicken for me. Don't ask me which part of Asia they didn't figure out.
No, that's what it was. It was Asian.
She's labeled chicken.
Yes,
salad.
It was Asian Asian barbecued chicken of some sort. It was, I don't know.
There's a great Margaret Cho bit about
I'm
from
sure.
Like 15 years ago.
Right.
You should
the
go
word
back.
Asian. Like.
Just like going up and, I don't mean to hijack this, I
but
promise.
No, that's good.
Going up and down the aisle of an airplane like Asian chicken salad, and they got to her, and the guy was like, chicken sauce.
Oh my goodness.
All right, I'm sorry to invoke that.
No,
but yes,
it's fine. Well, I didn't want to make the staff person who was escorting me waiting, so I only like just said like a quick hi. I was like, okay, but I need to go. It was interesting. Most of the people, once I was down there, I was kind of on the later end. It seemed like most of the staff people, most of the press people had already gone up to the press area, which was near where the like casters were. Like you could see like both of the stages where they actually were, which was kind of a good vantage point. But they basically had these tables because people are going to have their laptops and stuff writing. And like it was just totally like there were people when I got there that were already sitting on the stairs next to the like rows of tables.
There was nowhere extra to sit.
And the entire place was general admission. So like you could technically find a seat elsewhere, but it was also completely packed.
Right.
It was to the brim, like full of people. Like I could have gone maybe up to like nosebleeds. Yeah. There was like maybe one or two seats, but I'm not about that height. Like I can't even like no matter what. Like if it's like you know there's like that.
Even with a guardrail,
it's too much.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It was odd that they did it that way, that it was like...
It's not. So you're saying it's not ticketed seats? Like No.
No. But there's... So there were two. Number, I had a seat number on my ticket, right. And so when me and Ben were doing our, you know, multimedia experience in
the 360 fob,
we, like, walked down to go to our seats, and they were like, oh, no, you got to go up now. And we're like, what?
Oh, because like everything below.
Because everything below was already taken, and it was like, I get it.
What happens if you have to like run to the bathroom?
Well,
you hope you came with someone that saved your seat.
That's
you pee on the seat,
or you leave something and hope it doesn't get stolen.
No,
I saw a lot of backpacks.
No,
I know. I was like, no.
Backpacks weren't allowed.
That was a thing, apparently. Backpacks weren't allowed, but there were plenty of them, and they were all in the seats that I thought would be free.
Oh, my God.
I had a swag backpack that I picked
up.
Was
it one of those ones that has just, like, the little rope that closes it?
You already know what it is.
Yeah,
oh,
that's a good one.
You shitty little...
Did you get a towel?
It was actually very high quality.
Did you get one of those towels?
I did get a towel.
You spin it around like a helicopter?
No, but I did take the London Spitfire little airplane that they gave me, and I was going like, woo!
You rooting for London out here?
Rooting for them because the first day I was like, let's do this. And then second day I was like, wow, I'm really got to root for the underdog now. So then I was like rooting for Fusion because it was just getting hard.
It was pretty rough
to watch. Yeah. So.
So what was the actual event? So, like, you guys got there late on Friday or, like, evening on Friday.
Yeah.
And then it's Friday and then Friday night and then Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday with...
And then Sunday.
Not Sunday. Yeah. So it's a best of five match, mm-hmm. is a single match. Mm-hmm. And the idea was first to win best of three mm-hmm. matches. So the idea is hopefully second day that first match on the second day goes to the team that lost the first night, and then right. you go to a third.
And then you go to a third.
Which is, as Jeff Kaplan really wanted that maximum gaming, but we didn't get it.
Was that a Jeff Kaplan quote?
He, like, yeah.
Oh, boy.
What was it exactly?
He was like, I really hope it goes to three because we're all about the maximum gaming.
Yep.
And I was like, I need to fucking tweet this immediately.
The second that London won, I tweeted out, like, sorry, Jeff, no maximum gaming for you.
Oh.
It would have been, I will say that it felt like it went by really fast. Yeah. I mean, I was home.
Well, we didn't even go to, like, it was best of five, and it didn't go to five.
Yeah, it went to
in those matches, wow. even. No.
Four?
It was four?
Yeah, it was four on day two. And day one, it was five.
It was five on day one.
But yeah, it went by really fast. I could tell that they were, like, The way that they were trying to, like, lengthen the show with, like, the halftime and the sort of, like, the pre, you know, cast and things like that. The pre-cast, I think, was pretty good. I mean, it was interesting. I will say that the commentators, like, commentating while the game was going on, you could not hear them at all in the stadium.
Oh, wow. The stadium was really badly mixed for that.
Yeah, it was you, just everything that they were saying was, like, totally missed by most of the audience, I think. But the halftime shows, they had, like, the first day they had the Brooklyn Nets, who I think are the dance team for the Brooklyn Nets.
Uh-huh.
Wait, hold on.
The Brooklyn Nets.
Who are the dance team for the Brooklyn Nets? The Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
The Brooklyn Nets. Yeah. ETTE.
Nets.
Co-ed team, by the way, the Brooklyn Nets. So
awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
so cool. They had them perform during the halftime
like a dance number.
Which I think it was a great dance number. I think I understand that this is like a new, they're trying to figure out how to fill that halftime sort of.
There's downtime during these events. People need rest.
Yeah.
But it's like, how do you fill that space?
Right.
And for an audience hard. That isn't.
There were
for
multiple.
An audience that's maybe not even figured out all the way yet.
T-shirt gun segments.
Sure, that's cool.
That'll work.
People like t-shirts.
I don't know that plays mostly. I don't know what it was like on the stream. That's what I'm really curious about.
That's just
what happened
keeping
then.
People excited in the space, right?
Yeah.
The t-shirt guns are just about in the space. And they don't show that shit on TV even for. sports.
Right.
The thing that's tough for me is the stuff, not tough, the thing that's that would be, if I was them, it's a quandary, is like, what do I show to, there's two goals. Like, there's the goal of keeping the audience hyped in the space so they are excited, and that comes through on the television production.
Yeah.
And that comes through and makes the league look, you know, exciting. But there's also just, like, the, there, it's clear that, this is true for esports generally, but I think especially for Overwatch League, which has, you know, city-attached teams and has really great kind of marketing and has built partnerships with companies that are about hitting a wide audience.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you make the rest of the world take your shit seriously? And I think the thing that they went with was, like,
Make it a sports game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the Brooklyn Nets and DJ Khaled and, like...
Yeah.
I'm curious. The audience online did not eat that shit up.
No.
And
no.
So I'm.
Or did they?
Well,
like, look how much content came out of DJ Khaled.
Yeah, but that would be like some four-dimensional chess shit. I mean,
that's how DJ Khaled is like market himself. Like he must know, right?
Mm, yeah,
it's too. He's.
It's.
I thought that for a while. But
I hoped that.
Yeah, I hoped that for a while. I don't think so.
The father of Assad, though, I think.
I feel like there's just, it's an interesting dilemma because they want to reach an audience. They also know that, like there is a big black audience for video games. Like, T-Pain streams Overwatch. We were just talking about
this.
Yeah.
Rappers play video games. Drake was just playing Fortnite, obviously, right? Like, this is, like, a thing that is there is the audience there. DJ Khaled is someone who has made so many pop hits, so many, like, pop rap and pop R&B hits.
Yeah.
There is, like, it feels like the sort of person who would draw and legitimize the event in spaces that currently don't necessarily engage with the esports side of stuff in the numbers that they do with traditional sports, right?
True.
With T-sports.
Was that even advertised, though? So, like, guys, I didn't know like...
I saw on the, like, one of the emails that was sent out that DJ Khaled was performing on Saturday. But I will say that, like, DJ Khaled is, like, an odd choice in the sense that, like, any of his other... Like, his performances in general are, like, kind of awkward because he's... Yes. Just, you know, shouting, doing the whatever, like, Father Rasad,
right,
yeah.
He's a hype man.
Like, he's a hype man. Exactly. He's a DJ
hype man.
And so one of the things that got really awkward was, and has,
and, like,
I've seen him.
People together. That's the other thing he does. Is he's like, oh, I can get these six people on this track.
Exactly.
It'll become the song of the summer because of my personal connections plus working with good producers.
Exactly.
Right? So.
But the thing that's awkward, which is a thing that, this isn't the first time I've seen him perform. I feel like I saw him perform at something
like
he opened,
something.
And it was the same thing where he would throw it to the crowd and, like, people don't know the lyrics or if, like, and what I will say is, like, the crowd liked DJ Khaled, like, at Overwatch League. Like, they were having fun. Like, people were dancing. People were standing. But every time he threw it to the crowd, nobody knew the words to the song. So nobody could sing it back to him. And every time he did the, like, when I say over, you say watch or whatever. Like, people would say watch, you know? Like, people would engage with
that. One.
But when he was like, all right, now rap all the lyrics to No Brainer just came out yesterday.
Right.
Like, everyone was like, excuse me?
Okay, but
what?
It's like, all I do is, and no one knows, like, win.
Oh,
no,
people
what?
Were singing that one.
Okay,
that was the one, like, that one in Wild Thoughts people got down with.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
all right.
The, like,
all right.
Good job,
yeah,
Overwatch fans. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what the ideal person is for that sort
maybe
of thing.
Like someone that actually, like, Vince Staples, who plays Overwatch, T-Pain, who plays Overwatch.
Yeah.
Like, is it? It's someone that, like, should be, because DJ Khaled didn't know what he was talking about when he was saying, like, yo, Overwatch. He was like, when they call me to do this, I had another concert to go to, but I knew I had to do this Overwatch League history.
I love this.
And we're like,
I love this.
Major key.
Do you think he's ever played it? Do you think he's ever played it?
No. He doesn't play video games.
No. He gardens.
He gardens.
He takes care of his son.
Hammock talk.
Yeah, hammock talk. Yeah,
right.
This is
jet skis.
See? So he gets lost on jet skis in the dark.
You know.
Classic DJ College. Just
what do you,
DJ
all
College
right, so it. Here's the real question. When he heard about Overwatch, what do you think he thinks a game of Overwatch is?
I think he knows what it is. I think.
So they think it's like Call of Duty.
This is just
gay characters.
No idea about the queer.
Queer
content or like the queer fandom is what it's. Okay. There's no chance.
Super no.
Yeah, I think what he knows is
he didn't take one look.
That he got a check.
All right.
And like that check was big enough that he flew out to New York.
All right.
Yeah.
And
I think he had to be in New York anyway.
I think because
he was talking about he was like, I'm on tour with Beyonce, Jay-Z, I'm about to open for them, that's my next concert, but I had to be here.
History.
Overwatch. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think he looked at some key art maybe, you know?
I'm just saying, if he looked at Zarya and he was like,
I don't think he would, no. I don't know that DJ Khaled understands what, like, queer coding is.
Right. Yeah.
That's
not fair.
The spaces he moves in.
Yeah,
It's not in his own work. Maybe I'm wrong. It could, you know, totally
could
be.
It could be more woke than we think. Probably not.
You know.
Major
queer. Given some of his.
Yeah, major queer alert.
Given some of his.
We don't get that out here. It doesn't happen as often as we'd like. My biggest fear is that if someone clued him in, he would be less likely to perform.
Yeah. That'd be sad.
It would be.
Well,
it
he doesn't perform in one way, so we all know
true.
About that.
That's true.
True.
You know?
I forgot about that.
Right. It's the one.
A lot of people didn't.
Thanks.
So,
right.
How was the rest of the show besides someone watching the actual gameplay, mm-hmm. was it legible? Do you know what I mean when I say legible?
For the most part, they did a couple. One of the things that they did was they had like a picture-in-picture of they would have the larger one be sort of the like instant replay, and they would slow it down, and then a live feed as the smaller picture, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I will say that the UI of like having like the six characters on one side and six characters on the other, and seeing their like ultimate charge and like their deaths, like made sort of the action in the middle a lot more legible because if I saw something go on and like I see someone die, I like can begin to infer what happened.
You didn't have it too quickly or the perspective you need.
Yeah.
To.
And even like my boyfriend hasn't watched any Overwatch. He wanted to go because he was just like really interested in the spectacle of the whole thing. And there's sort of like they had like these intro videos that they would explain the rules of like each mode and each match, which was like super helpful for him. And he like instantly, and he could just like begin to read the room and read the sort of displays and begin to understand what was going on. So he picked it up super quickly. So it seemed like super accessible.
Yeah. It was definitely a thing that you knew. It was like, oh, right, they're showing this on ESPN.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They need to explain what the heck is happening on the screen right now. Mm-hmm. And like, so one of the things is like there was like a central screen that was just showing like gameplay, and you would have the kill feed like normal in the game, but that wasn't super legible from our seats. So that the big side things were kind of like what took the place of that for the people in the arena, which was like a good fix, I think.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that, like, you would totally miss, like, oh, did that person just die because of that person? Like, and so, like, in, like, I think the production of, like, they even did, like, silly little things that were, like, really, really helpful for being in person. Like, when it went into overtime, all the lights in the stadium would turn orange
really
and, like, start
cool.
flashing, being like, it's the overtime. Like, shit's happening. Like, you knew in that room, like, oh, this is serious business.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when they would introduce, like, the new map, they would use all three screens to kind of do this, like, panorama of the map.
Okay.
And then
cool.
the lights around the whole stadium would, like, match the map, which was, like, really cool for just, like, setting the mood. So I think they used, like, for the most part, I think they like use the screens and the like atmosphere.
Yeah, the actual presentation of the play.
Yeah,
really
very
good.
It was pretty good. Yeah,
awesome. And like also they've been doing this the whole season, but like they've got these really clear, like each team has a color, right? And it's very easy to see like all of the like every effect is coded in the team's specific color, even if normally it would be something else in the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay.
That's interesting.
So like like Zarya's like ball is usually kind of bluish, but like it'd be like deep blue for the London Spitfire,
really?
or white for Philly.
Oh.
Yes,
cool.
The whole thing
That's
was
useful.
Coded that way,
That's
which was
really
very
useful.
was
really
made
cool.
it a lot easier to read.
How often? So obviously, this is the finals for this season,
right?
But like, how often do these events actually? Like, if I wanted to get into the New York Excelsior, is that right?
Yeah,
next year. how often do they play games at locations in the city?
Like, physically?
Yeah.
Like, as far as I can remember, not really.
I mean, they do. It's weird because they have, like, the Blizzard Arena in...
Yeah, that's
right.
A thing.
And I feel like most
that's
of
not,
these...
Where is that at?
I think it's in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It's in LA. Okay. That makes sense given where Blizzard is.
Yeah. I think most of the games take place at places like that, like spaces that are owned by...
That's such a bummer. That part of it's a huge bummer because, like, I would want that experience... I could imagine myself doing that, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go see them a couple times a year.
Right.
And, like, go to home games, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll do another sport. Like, oh, yeah, I'll go to a baseball game. Why
you'll see the Brooklyn Nets.
Right, I would see the Brooklyn
Nets. And the Brooklyn Nets.
And the Brooklyn Nets.
At least according to a couple questions during the pressers, is a thing that fans have been asking for, is local games. Like, there's a demand for it, and hopefully they can figure that out with the next season.
Cool.
Does it have anything to do, I just wonder, I'm completely spitballing, if... You know, the fandoms aren't necessarily as geographically tied as they are maybe to traditional sports. I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm just putting this question out there.
I think they were trying to make that be the thing, right?
They
want them to be geographically.
They want you to be rooting for your home
anybody
team.
Anybody can root for the London Spitfire around the world. But I think part of the reason you name a team like that is to try to activate a local contingent, right?
Totally.
Gotcha. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the big things was, like, during the presser after London won, was like, are you finally going to come visit, basically? Like, they've only been there for a week, and, like, the fans, there's a demand from the fans to actually see and interact with these players. So, like,
they don't
that part
in
is
London. They're
exactly.
Not actually in
no.
London
gotcha.
No. So, like, but, like, it's at least in that aspect, it's working. Like, people want to, like, interact with them and,
that's
like, be
cool.
more involved.
Yeah.
I think most of the teams actually live in Los Angeles. At least Philadelphia Fusion does, I think, because they had, like, some intro videos of, like, the team's house or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense that, like, they're close to Blizzard. They live in L.A., and if most of their matches are taking place at the Blizzard Arena, that they would, you know, all live there. But it would be nice to see. I mean, that was the first thing I said after the game is, like, I wish I could do this more often. Right. Like, I wish I could just, you know, like, make this a thing that I
every
do.
Every few weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Catch an Overwatch game.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah, totally. And I bet you the other thing there that would be cool is it would give them an opportunity to test the waters and figure out the presentation stuff even more.
Totally.
Right.
So we're like, okay, what acts really do light up the audience here and at home? What are the ones that, like, you know, even the Super Bowl is built for a wider audience than football fans. So I get needing to put someone on stage who is not just appealing to the Overwatch League fans, right?
Yeah.
I do get it. But I think it would be fun to see them continue to figure out how to present the show to various audiences and local audiences and stuff like that. I'm sure there are groups you could go watch. There are definitely bars and cafes and stuff in New York where we could go watch New York Excelsior games with groups of people who are watching.
For sure.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. But
it's
still a different thing.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, the like feeling of being in that room with that many people and all of them are, like, really excited to see what's happening. And, like, whenever, like, every snipe that happened in that game was
just
wild. Yeah, and it's a totally different thing.
Cool. Any other final thoughts before we take a break on the Overwatch League Finals?
I guess I just have to give a small shout out to, I forgot what player it was. I don't think I wrote it down.
Carpe?
One player. Maybe, actually.
Was it who won MVP?
No.
That was.
No. I don't think it was.
Profit.
Profit?
Profit.
That might have been Profit.
I thought Profit.
I don't remember who it was on the London, but it was such a funny moment that I, like, remember this very clearly where they asked, like, what did you think of, like, what did you think of the season and what did you think of the playoffs and the final? Like, how are your feelings on these three different stages? And the answer was basically, I didn't think it'd be this easy. I was like, oh my God, really? Like,
might have been Profit.
Jesus Christ.
Profit,
shade. The shade was
the DPS
so real.
Player for London Spitfire,
right.
Who won MVP of the league.
B-Dosen? Is it B-Dosen?
It might have, actually, that might have been who said it.
Troy said it, yes.
Yeah, but
I didn't think it would be this easy. Next year, I hope we play against a stronger team.
Yep.
Like, we have signed ourselves up to be the bad guys in the movie.
That's why
I'm trying to do a heel
fucking
thing.
Yeah, it was a
is
heel
that what
turn.
This is?
That's why I came off of London Spitfire by day two. I was like, went in, I was like, I'll root for, you know, the the outsiders. I don't know. I don't care about America right now. Right. I'm not into it.
Right.
And then next day I was like, these fucking imperialists, I swear to God, I can't do this. I can't.
Jeez. One thing that was really interesting, too, is that the two teams were, well, London was all Korean, and the other team, Philly, was half and half, like, European Korean. And it was very strange during the press events. None of the Korean players on Fusion ever spoke, even though they were getting all of their questions translated to them. And even, I guess, like, part of it is definitely that they were losing both nights, that they seemed, like, pretty down. But, like, all of the, like, communication came from the European players, probably just because they already speak English, but it also felt very much like they were in charge or something. Which is very, it was a weird vibe.
At the very least. You know, that's a thing that is going to have to be dealt with as,
Like,
again, as this league continues to be big.
The way that organizations are created and, like, who...
And make sure that, everybody on them can have a place to speak.
Exactly.
So, they should be. They should be able to. Yes. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about outer space, which is where I spent my weekend.
Yeah.
Be right back.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, we are back, and I'm in a spaceship. It's an S-class fighter. I have plus 48% lasers on it, and I have plus 24% shields.
Womp.
And what does that sound? What is the womp?
That's a shield.
No, womp. Oh, shield.
Womp.
Not shield. Natalie's shaking her head.
Womp.
What is the womp?
My big boy approaching.
Is there a big boy on this planet?
There might be a big boy
Quick,
on this planet.
Quick, scan it, Austin.
Scan it for 70,000 credits, space credits.
Oh,
space
wow.
Bucks.
Big Boyopolis.
Big Boyopolis. That's the name of my new planet.
I'd like to live there.
I play a bunch of No Man's Sky next. Obviously, we covered it a bunch. We did the pre-release interview with Sean Murray that's up on the site. We did a launch day stream of it across a couple of different platforms. If you missed that, we did it on PS4 Pro, Xbox One X, and
PC.
I'm playing it on PC primarily. I started a new file and have been playing that, and it's been really, 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 really fun. It's still buggy in places. It still has some serious issues in terms of, like, I mean, there are releasing tons of fixes is the first and foremost
thing
I'll say
quickly.
There, is that, like, they're turning out a new experimental patch every day at this point. So I think most of that stuff will get ironed out as people continue to submit bug reports. But the core experience just completely has me again. I'm playing on normal difficulty. There's also, like, survival, permadeath, and creative, where, like, there's just, hey, you want to go build stuff, hey, you want to just fly around and explore. I cannot recommend creative enough. I know there's some people who've hit some difficulty spikes where it's like, I just want to go explore cool planets. Play on creative. It's dope. It's really cool. But I've been playing on normal and have had really a lot of fun hitting the point in the game now where, you know, Sean Murray said this in our interview, and I, not that I didn't believe him, but I didn't believe that he was right, which is he said, our goal is to have by hour 15 so many things you could be doing that you feel overwhelmed in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I'll probably just feel overwhelmed. Like, I don't want to feel overwhelmed. But I think for me at least he was right. 15 hours in, I'm like 18 hours in on this file now. I have so many things I could be focusing on. And that's partially because it has so many more – I mean, I think fundamentally it's largely the structure is the structure that it was when it launched. There are definitely people who I think if they'd given it a chance at launch – if they could have gotten past the bad press and the lack of features, would have found something they would have liked there, or at least somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But they've added so many on that core box, on that core structure, on that foundation. They've added so many new loops that are so different and interesting, or maybe they're not that different except in tone or in theme or something, where – for instance, right now, if I booted up the game, here are the things I could go do. Let's say I had a goal. And this is the way this game works for me. It's like I have a goal. Right now, I have a temperate planet. I'm building a base on this planet, and it's all made of wood, and it's like this cool. There's no, it's a, so it's a temperate planet that never rains. I've never had a storm. I've never had anything bad happen. It's just like, I'm not dying slowly from radiation poisoning for fucking once. It's beautiful. The animals are all dope.
What could go wrong?
I don't know. And I set up next to a like trade depot, which means that ships are always flying around.
Oh, yeah.
So it just kind of feels like active and exciting, and I can go buy new ships whenever I have the urge.
You set up shop next to the grocery store.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I'm building out from this like cliff, this kind of like wooden multi-level open air like base that has, you know, like stairs going up to higher levels, and there's no ceilings, there's no walls, there's no, it's just like a perfect outdoor. It's like, what if you could live on like a deck? What if you could live nice outdoor like deck that your family built? You go out there, you barbecue, you look out the vista. It's beautiful. You go fishing right from the deck.
Sounds wonderful.
But if I wanted to do that, and let's say I wanted to build something new and I needed, like, resources, I could go explore the planet I'm on and do some side things to where I find an ancient ruin. And in that ancient ruin, I could find a monolith, and that monolith could say, hey, do you want to learn more language or learn more history? And I'd be like, oh, give me the history. Of course I did. I like the language stuff, too. But the history
is pretty
cool.
But lore. And so the lore is like, oh, word, there's some deep, rad lore in this game. Yeah. Don't forget it. There's, like, really rad lore in this game. And also, here's another point on this planet where there's another ancient ruin that's partially submerged into the dirt. And you go there and you start digging through the dirt and you start finding these like chests that have ancient keys in them. And then finally you find this ancient chest.
Ancient key.
That's ancient key alert. And you open this chest and inside there's like an envelope that's 1,008 years old that has like some silver hair in it. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And like, I don't know what this is, but it's worth 2.5 million space units.
What? And
yeah. So do those. Do the things I'm saying right now. Because you can get something wild. Or you go find a crash freighter and do a similar thing of like digging through and finding the cargo pods and finding what you need to repair the cargo pods so you can get the stuff out of that. So that's one way to make money and then like get what I the resources I need to build my cool base. Or I could fly up to my freighter above me, which I got from rescuing it from pirates, which I think everybody gets now after their, like, fourth or fifth jump. Fly into like a...
I haven't hit that yet because I explore too much.
Totally. But if you jump a few more times, you'll probably like jump into a system and see a freighter under attack from pirates. It's a really funny bit because it's like you beat the pirates. The captain's like, hey, can you come talk to me in the freighter? And you roll in and they're just like, hey, yeah, this sucks. I can't do this freighter captain thing anymore. I'm not cut out for it. Do you want this?
Yeah.
I gotta go. And you're like, yeah, I guess, cool freighter. And like, then you have a freighter, and then you get frigates. And so I could go up there and spend some time sending my fleet out on missions and getting back little fleet reports where it's like, I sent them out on different types of missions, combat missions, trade missions, exploration, and industrial. So I went out on an exploration mission recently, and it like found an empty freighter, and it was like, yeah, we got some weird readings from in here, but we didn't know. We decided to go for it anyway, and we found these eggs, and we brought them back on board. I'm like, no, you cannot bring eggs on board. Don't do that. they blew up, and half of our ship is all fucked up. Can you come repair it?
Oh.
But also, we found this cobalt, and now you can have that. Or like, oh, also, we did a trade, and here's 38,000 units or whatever. So I can get money that way. Or I could take missions from that freighter where I'm going to go out and hunt pirates or go be a pirate and, like, attack some other space freighters.
Oh, are you a pirate, Austin?
I've been a pirate in this game. I was playing the other night. Yeah. I don't have to get into, like, a friend of mine just, like, jumped into my game, and I was like, what if we just spent the next hour robbing people? It's robbing season. And it can be buggy. I think the multiplayer stuff is still pretty buggy. But it's just the point is that there's all of these different ways now. Or I could be a farmer. Or I could be, you know, just doing – oh, the other great one. I upgraded my space gun, my multi-tool, to have two S-class scanner modules on it, which upgrade the amount of money you get from just scanning animals by an amount, a percentage I've never seen in a video game. It's like plus 8,000% money
for scanning animals,
plus 7,000% for scanning plants. And it's like, wait, 8,000% more money from scanning an animal? Just give me my gun's a camera now.
Taking
pictures of these animals.
Yeah.
Pokemon Snap time.
Shoot them with the camera, not with the gun.
Totally. Like, if I'm going to make 100,000 units for scanning animals now, you could be the space biologist. You could be the space zoologist who's going around and like building out your catalog. And so that addition of just like, oh, I'm overwhelmed by all these different things I can do, on top of just the fact that I think it plays better, it feels better.
Yeah.
The third person stuff is such an addition. Okado, you've been playing a bunch of it. Danielle, you've been playing a bunch of it. I'm curious about your experiences, but especially with, like, you both played it like me before.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest thing that's changed the experience for you so far?
Go ahead, because I have a weird thing.
Okay. I think the amount of things, resources that you need feels so much better. Like, I don't feel like when I get stuck on a planet, like, I can make the resources for fuel much easier, but it's not so quick that it feels meaningless.
Right.
Right? They I think they finally hit that sweet spot of, like, this feels like I'm surviving, I'm scraping along, but it doesn't become a slog.
Right.
That's the biggest thing for me from launch to now, is that they've really ironed out that ramp of, like, finding these couple of things, making the refiner, then you got to refine this to make the other thing, and then you've got fuel and you're good to go, right? Like, like there's enough steps that it's like a good chunk of time, but it's not like, because they've added these steps.
Right. You're talking about warp fuel there specifically,
which
is like jumping from system to system, where before it was like, okay, well, first you have to make this purple thing.
Right.
Then you take the purple thing and make it into a red thing and then a green thing, and then you can turn it into a warp cell, and then you can go. And now it's like that part of it's way more streamlined.
Yes, much more. And, like, it still has, like, a lot of different things. Like, you still need to have, like, you need to have this new, the refiner thing, which, like, adds, like, this added element of, like, okay, you have to fuel the refiner and, like, put in a certain amount of, and, like, it's not one-to-one.
It feels
and, like
a Don't Starve thing to me. If either
I played a ton of that.
Yeah, where you're like, okay, I have this machine, and I put stuff in, and it turns into this other version of a thing.
Right.
And the thing that I like about that is, like, all right, I'm going to put all this copper in here so I can get chromatic metal or whatever.
Right.
Oh, and while that's happening, I'm going to go over here and explore this crater.
I love that.
And then come back and get my chromatic metal.
And it's done.
Then it's done.
Yeah.
Forget about it. Perfect.
Yeah. Forget about it.
It's nice,
isn't it, Vinny? Yeah.
So how about for you then?
All right, so
I've had a different experience.
I'll very
there.
Briefly go through. I do really appreciate that. I actually finally got to that place last night, but it was a bit of a journey to get there.
I saw your Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had played, you know, many hours of it when it first came out, but that was 2 years ago. So I booted up a brand new disc.
Yeah.
Thank you, Austin.
Uh-huh.
And there was no save file associated. And I was like, oh, I must have played this on my ex's account, basically.
Yeah, sure.
It's a new PlayStation, new account. So it's sort of like, all right, okay, fine, I'll start up again. I started up a new game, and I was on a desert planet, and I was like, wow, this really looks the same. I really thought that there were changes for next. After like an hour of getting through, I went through the whole grind of the beginning,
like fixing a ship
of the game, fixing the ship, the whole thing, before I realized that next was downloading in the background.
Wow.
So...
Well,
I stopped that.
Had a better, a more fresh comparison.
That's
between
true.
The launch
there you go.
And
I
the
just
final.
Played the launch game the other day,
yesterday or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I re-rolled. So we're on like the third re-roll at this point.
If you download next, you get,
Start again. And I have a planet that is like extremely toxic, and I was like,
not just
I
toxic.
Figured it out that you know. Everybody starts on a toxic or radiation or some sort of environmental damage planet to get you to like actually understand and learn the tutorials. I thought I was too big for my britches and didn't need that tutorial shit because I was like, I'm a veteran. I've played 30 hours of this game, including the other like 2 hours I played of the launch game just the other day.
They've changed so much.
They've changed so much. I know.
Yeah.
And I went from like planet to planet. Never got a warp cell. Just went from bad planet to bad planet and died like 6 times to firestorms. And I was like, fuck. And then I like kind of went, I kind of, you know, sheepishly, my tail between my legs, I re-rolled again. So we're on like game number four at this point. Finally got a planet that was like toxic but not terrible and actually paid attention to the tutorial. And actually got through. So now I'm earlier in the game than I should be by all for how many hours I've put into it in the last, you know, like few days.
Sure.
But I don't have a warp cell yet, but I have been going from the planets in my system and they're pretty nice. It's industrial and promising.
Ooh,
those are the terms. Like slightly toxic but promising.
But promising.
So, you know,
nice
whatever.
Nice to have a promising environment.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Someone put up, I think it was Nick, Nick is Next, friend of the show, tweeted today. I think it was Nick is Next, who tweeted that he'd found a planet that has the environment type or the weather, the climate was memories of frost.
Oh,
like,
evocative.
Super evocative.
Yes.
It was one of those weird planets that just has like weird sci-fi geography.
Yes.
Like, stuff is made of glass and cyborgs.
Stuff's just floating, like islands of land.
This is like
land.
Even further than that. Like some of the, they have a whole like new exotic planet class that came out a couple of updates
ago.
That was in
Atlas Rises.
It was like a key part of Atlas Rises, of the main storyline. And like you'll see it eventually.
Oh, I'm so excited.
There's a bunch of them that all have just like really weird sci-fi bullshit happening in them. And I think that was one of the ones for that. And I mean, that's one of my favorite things right now is just the thing that it's hitting me with is just like I'm not playing a lot multiplayer. I've played a little bit multiplayer both actively with a friend and then also just like, hey, someone jumped in my game really quick or whatever. But I am – there's the asynchronous multiplayer aspect of this game in the game, which is the like, oh, people named things. Like, oh, hey, you saw that thing and you gave it – you called it a big boy and now it says big boyopolis and like whatever.
Womp. Is that the name?
Womp, right. And that's cool. That's that part of it's cool. But what I really love is the external – asynchronous multiplayer, which is going on Twitter and seeing dope screenshots.
Yes. That part's so good. Many,
or like things happening on, like it's wild going on the Reddit page now, and every post that it, like there are posts that are like, hey, be careful this bug will fuck you over, hey, check your save file and make sure you're not getting this weird repeated line of code,
right?
Because that's a bad sign. But there are also so many posts that are like, hey, I found a water planet where it's all water and the water is really high to the degree that when I landed in the planet, I went underwater.
Oh,
like, what? That's wild, right? Or the like those sorts of stories were not happening that often at launch, partially because the game is by like the new terrain generation is just so much better.
Yeah.
Like, you can it's like
I saw it even like in that wild split where I played basically the old game with no updates into the fully updated new game. It was just like, holy crap. Like, this is so much more varied and so much more interesting to look at. It was amazing.
Even just seeing from the sky, looking down, and it actually matching to what you're looking at from higher up in space.
So
it used to do it at a certain level as you descended, but now it's like, from space, I can see there's a giant canal here or a trench, and I can fly down and find that trench and fly through that trench. And that's just like, feet makes it feel like a place that has had a geological history in a way that it didn't previously. That communicates so much about the place. So, like, I found one place that was like all of – I was flying over the water and it was just like little circles, like little pools of water, like land popping up, just a little bit of like a little bit of land in a ring basically popping above the ocean surface. Like, what the fuck is happening here? And finally I flew over land and saw that there are these like black craters from like impacts. And it's like, oh, something has been hitting this planet.
Oh.
Like, that's not what happened. It rolled dice in the background. I was like, oh, yeah, this is a crater planet. Hit the checkbox on crater. But it looked
but
like
But somebody
that,
connected that logic
that.
At some point in programming it.
Right,
so,
right.
Like,
which
yes,
is awesome.
It kind of, yeah.
And for me as the player, none of that actually happened. All I saw was like, oh, shit, crater, you know, asteroids crashed here and made this whole thing like pockmarked with these round circles that are everywhere. That's why there's also like the different colors and blah, blah, blah. It was really, really, really cool.
That's so rad.
Totally. So, like, and I think on top of that, the other big one for me is just third person.
Sure.
It has turned out to be...
That's the way you like to play?
I've been playing third person. I still love first person. I still really like the experience of seeing stuff like seeing the new cockpit. If I get a new ship, I'm going in and be like, oh, what's this cockpit look like or whatever. I still like taking photos and I like looking around the environment in first person. I'm walking through this forest.
Yeah.
But the having the scale of third person and seeing how big an animal is or seeing just having the scale to a vista.
Yeah.
Turns out does a lot to communicate tone and space.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to play a lot more. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that it's found an audience and I'm glad that it's improved. Like, I'm a big fan of that game from when it launched, but I'm also like, it's improved so much since then. I'm replaying through the story stuff because I started the new campaign or a new save, and like that stuff is still really cool.
Yeah. What I played of it the first time around was really exciting, and like, I don't remember why I stopped.
Right.
I was interested in the story. It wasn't because the story was not interesting.
Yeah,
it was like something happened.
You should keep playing.
Yes.
Because there was really good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Still.
No, I'm excited to catch up with my old save and do it again.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on No Man's Sky? I'm going to keep checking in on it because I am going to keep playing it probably, but it's nice to like have it. It's nice to have this retreat again. It's been a very busy couple of weeks, so it's been cool to be able to, like, I'm going to go to pretty space land, you know?
I guess just a shout out, just in case people don't know, there is a specific photo mode. It's not just like taking screenshots. Yes, it's very good. There are a lot of options. Yeah. Depth of field stuff in there, like filters and like stuff. Time of day. Yeah, you can move, you can put the sun wherever you want, which is really good. Really fun. That's so really good.
Great. That's
It's not as in depth as like the Horizon Zero Dawn one. I don't think it is. Maybe I don't think it is, but it's still very, very cool. Doing character customization stuff really helps bring out a lot.
For sure.
Are you playing as a Gek?
I'm a little Gek.
Okay. Have you made your character yet?
I got to my first space station last night. Right. So I'm just messing with colors. I'm making like a very rainbow bright little lady kind of thing going on.
Okay.
But, you know, we'll see. I was going to say the one thing that really strikes me more than anything was what made me stop playing after a while was just feeling like I was on a treadmill that sucked. Mm. Like it was actually not a very fun treadmill.
Right.
And now it feels like every aspect of the treadmill has been improved. Right. Like every aspect.
It's still a treadmill.
You were saying the loops on loops on loops. Right. There are different loops to actually go and look at. Yes. And the world feels more populated.
That's
even
huge.
Even like very, you know, you're still alone on huge stretches of that's part of the gameplay experience. But when you actually go to trading posts, there are at least five or six cool aliens to have cool interactions with.
Totally.
Makes it feel a little bit more like, yeah, this is an actual place. Even if it's sparsely populated, there's like other life here, and that's also a really welcoming feeling.
Even the animal AI has improved in a way that actually
it doesn't just poop out cookies or whatever it used to do. Yeah.
So I mean, it still does poop out cookies.
All right, well, I mean that's fine.
We were playing on the launch day, and Natalie was mad because I had some missions to kill animals. I was like, I got to kill these animals. But I didn't do it in front of you. And so when I went home,
This is worse, actually.
Wait.
This is the lobster thing.
Oh.
It's the lobster thing.
From this morning.
You were talking about killing your own food.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So
I'm the lobster. Do it in front of me.
Oh, my God.
I didn't kill you.
Natalie?
Animorph.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
In the previous release, when they added missions, and some of the missions are like, hey, there's overpopulation. Can you go kill 17 space antelope or whatever? Like, yeah, sure, I got it. Don't worry about it. In the previous games, it was, hey, don't worry, I got it, I'm taking care of it. Now it was like, all right, kill that first antelope. And then it was like, one of them was like, and then like the rest all as a herd break off and run together. And it was like, oh, they've never herded before.
Yeah.
They've never had that AI that makes them move like a pack before. And I immediately felt terrible.
Oh.
And so that's the difference, is I felt really bad as I killed those 17 space antelope. And I
don't think you kept going?
Yeah, just for the 17.
But never again, right?
It's going to be fine.
I have a mission. To save my friend. I need to raise my rep with the Viking, and they needed those space antelope.
One life for many?
It's a very important life.
I just saw Mission Impossible last night.
Me too. Two nights ago.
One life.
Yeah, You're Ethan. No, you're Ethan. You're the one who. Oh, wait, no, you're
no, no one wants to be Tom.
You're Ethan.
And you're the evil. You're not evil. She wasn't evil. She was cool. The CIA lady who's like, no,
yeah,
I have to make
lady.
The. Yeah, We should talk about waypoints later. We're going to do this. Let's talk about waypoints. We've already gone for a little while today, so we'll come back to the question bucket next week. Unless you give me a look, do you want to?
No,
do...
I have a waypoint.
Oh, okay.
I'm excited.
Tell me about
your
waypoint.
It's GLOW, season 2 of GLOW.
Okay.
So good. I wrote
Explain
a little bit about
GLOW
it. All right, GLOW stands for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and it is a Netflix series, a fictionalized series in modern times. Last season was the first season was last year. The current season, or the one that just came out this month, you know, is very, very recent. And it is a sort of fictionalized series about a real thing, a real series from the 80s of all women wrestling. But that wasn't just a wrestling show. It was also a variety show with really ridiculous comedy and stunts and bad rapping and music videos. And it's a delight. However, they also like go in deep on this of the fact that it's like extremely racist and classist and sexist. Like all these women were playing like very stereotypical characters that were like intensely problematic in a lot of ways. And the first season goes in on that a bit, but this second season really, 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 I think, found its heart in what it actually wants to say about those politics. I wrote about that a little bit on the site last week, but I finally finished the series this weekend because I had only gotten to about halfway. And there's some gay stuff in the second half of the series, which is really good.
Nice.
Some of it is very hard-hitting and tough, and it has to do with the AIDS epidemic.
Right,
we're talking about 1985 here.
Right.
And some of it's actually really sweet and really nice. So we got all sides on that.
Gotta hear all sides.
I mean, wow. You know, sometimes the gay has, in a good way, it actually showed, like, happy queer. And then also, like, a queer struggle.
Right. It didn't, it's not one of those
I said that poorly,
like,
but yeah.
That's but I know what you mean. Right? Yeah. It's like there is, I think it's like a thing that comes up a lot in queer communities is like, hey, we want to see happy queer characters, but also creators often are like, yeah, dog, that's not my experience, and I'm making this art for me as much as for you. I want to represent why the struggle means something to me. Yes. I want to represent pain as well as joy. And the alternative is, historically, there's been a lot of queer struggle and with very little queer joy shown.
Yes.
And so I think that balance seems good.
Yeah. I think it works
not
for this.
Not to be a centrist on this issue.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, that's not the way it is. It's just this particular context. Yes.
Natalie.
Do I have a waypoint?
Do you have a waypoint?
Maybe the new Mission Impossible movie.
Mission Impossible Fallout.
Honestly, had a really good time. Action packed. Yeah.
That movie was like dope.
It was.
I liked that movie.
Seeing that movie after seeing, like, the last few action movies I've seen have mostly been like Marvel movies, and seeing like actual action.
It's cool.
as compared to CGI action, this just felt like so like gritty and like. Like, just, and knowing that, like, Tom Cruise did all the, like, did all the stunts, yeah. Like, jumped out of a plane 100 times to get that, like, that, it was just like, man, you got a problem, but I'm here, I'm here to watch the outcome, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The thing, there's a couple things I loved about it in terms of, this is an action movie, and so it's gonna. We know it's gonna go ridiculous places.
Yeah,
Mission Impossible in the last few have gone to increasingly ridiculous places.
Totally,
sandstorms and diving into giant whirlpools, and you know, there's always
a gimmick.
Dubai climbing on the side of the thing. And
yeah,
like, it's been like that. And action movies in general have. There's been a history of like increased stakes, increased like. Hey, this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Totally.
And there's always been exceptions. I think John Wick has been a series that's like feels gritty and physical and weighty.
But like grounded.
Still grounded, right? Yeah. Exactly. Or, you know, there have been other examples of that sort of. Those sorts of fight scenes pop up here and there.
Mm-hmm. Atomic Blonde.
A similar creative background.
Yes.
The fight scene in Eastern Promises. Like there are here and there, there are those moments of like, oh, wow. This felt more like those things than like Mission Impossible, where like, yes, the action sequence sequences have gimmicks, but the gimmicks are like the bathroom fight scene where the gimmick is, what's up? Go.
But the one disappointment I had in that bathroom fight scene was when he went, it didn't make the noise.
Because that's not what they were going for.
I know, but it was so cool.
He didn't grow a pocket?
Like,
he didn't grow the pocket in the movie?
He didn't grow a pocket for
real. I know.
The gift was misleading.
I understand.
I understand that tweet was good.
Gifts
are compressed. Yeah. He didn't grow a pocket. Henry Cavill, he was great in this.
Yeah, he was very good.
But that fight scene was so good because the entire gimmick of that fight scene, one, is just like there's ceramic everywhere. Mm. Two, the space was very clearly communicated where like it's a bathroom that has stalls at the end. And then has like, you know, urinals on the sides
and a mirror
and
divide.
A mirror with like the sinks dividing it, like so it's a third wall, like a wall between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot it in such a way that it was very clear where the action was happening.
Totally.
They separated the fighting. There's like 2-on-1 fight basically, and the one was very, very good and like powerful and strong and quick and all that.
Yeah.
And so it was like using that against them. And then three, they introduced this thing which is like the metal pipe, one of the like a curved metal pipe from a sink that lets you do all sorts of cool like pulling people around and like it's dangerous because it's sharp stuff, and like all of the sequences in that movie have that sort of very grounded simple gimmick that adds something to what the fight is or what the action sequence is.
Totally.
And it never goes to I'm climbing on the side of a building in Dubai or I'm diving into a I don't think so. I think that stuff is like very 80s action all the way through. Mm-hmm. There's like a helicopter sequence.
That's what I was referring to.
But like that sequence is like you could have shot that sequence, a version of that sequence in the 1980s. It's just been a way worse version.
Yeah.
They brought higher production value to a very classic style. Like that chase sequence. There's a car chase.
Oh, God.
That's just a dope car chase.
Yeah.
And like coming off of seeing Fast and Furious for years, which I like the Fast and the Furious movies, but where they have escalating, like not just escalating stakes, but escalating.
Like jumping off ramps.
Right, totally.
And like just like. this was like, we're in fucking Paris.
We're just in Paris and driving cars.
Yeah.
Remember how that's good. Cool? Yeah. The answer is like, yeah, I do remember how that's
cool.
Hell
yeah.
Some good acting, fun. It's a fun movie. I think it's genuinely, I like Ving Rhames a lot. Ving Rhames steals the show every time he talks. Simon Pegg is really funny in it.
Yeah.
All the characters are like fairly solid. I definitely wish there had been, it's funny to be like, oh yeah, this is an important series for Ethan Hunt's personal life, but like,
yeah,
you know?
And a lot of people don't remember that stuff because, like, who remembers? Because the
Bellerophon from the mid-2000s one.
Wow,
yeah,
that's a deep cut from the second one.
Hell
right?
Yeah,
but like
MI2,
the romantic interest from MI2 just vanished from this series without ever being mentioned again, and new romantic interests have been injected, and like, I think this movie does an all right job of introducing those to a new viewer.
Yeah.
But the series in general has not been great for women. And this one continues to. There are rad women
it's
in this right. series. It's all right. It ain't winning awards on this.
No.
But like, I wish that there. It's like, for whatever reason, I've seen all of these movies, but I don't ever remember that I've seen all of these movies.
Yeah.
I always think there's one I missed, and that's why it doesn't hang together in my head in the same way.
Well, they're spaced out, like, in time. Like, in the terms of, like, how often they've come out, they're spaced out far enough that you, like, lose.
Yeah.
Because I know I've been watching these since I was a kid.
Right.
Like, I've seen all these. I know that there's lore.
Yes.
I have no idea what it is.
2001, 2004 or 5, and then, like, 2011. And then
2013? So, like,
yeah.
No, there's a 2000. There's a gap.
There are a couple of gaps.
Close,
yeah. Yeah. One or two. It's like maybe it's like 2001 and like 2004 or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Because I remember Bellerophon.
Right. That's the John Woo one, right?
Yes.
That's the second one.
Yeah, that's Long Hair Tom.
Right. That's Long Hair Tom.
It is.
And three is Philip Seymour Hoffman is the bad guy.
Yes.
Who is fucking great.
Yeah. Oh my God. He was amazing in that.
Really
I haven't seen that since it was in theaters, but yeah.
He's just like such like a guy in a dress shirt which is already scary in my opinion. And
yep.
Like a white dude in a dress shirt.
Run.
Was important.
Run the other way.
Get the fuck out. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, totally. And then
the two more recent, well, the most recent one and then the one before that were the J.J. Abrams ones that were very like stylish.
Yes.
In a way. Well, they were all stylish.
They felt good, though.
But they had a different...
I don't know.
Different vibe.
Anyway, I enjoyed that movie more than I thought I would.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And that was cool, so...
Was that your waypoint, too? Are you sharing a waypoint?
I'm going to share this waypoint, because otherwise we'll talk for another 20 minutes about a bad anime I'm watching, which we'll get around to. I love it. It's great. Anyway, go ahead. Kato.
Zol, the will of thousands, perished but was not destroyed.
Great.
Death is a road. Uh-huh. Death is a metamorphosis.
Yeah.
The unsacred union between destroyer and destroyed.
Oh.
The might which defeats a god is also the ambrosia that god craves. The meat, sweet logic of existence asserted by violence.
Oh.
The binomial decision between two ways of being which deny each other. In dying, Zol fed richly. There's a new gun in Destiny that's cool as hell.
Okay.
Wow!
I'm sorry that... Good. I'm not sure how many people are still playing Destiny out there, but if you fell off of Destiny, you should check back in for this specific thing that's happening every weekend now. Starting Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, goes all the way till Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern. There's a not-so-secret anymore, but secret mission that you can go on by doing a set of steps. The gun is called the Whisper of the Worm. It's got amazing
worm.
Worm.
God damn.
Lots of worm. And it's
this is
been
why you're Gen Z and I'm a millennial.
Yep.
Continue.
It's been kind of amazing watching this mission come out and seeing the community kind of like revitalize.
Yeah.
Like it's been such a great thing to see all of the, especially on like the Waypoint Discord, which we never really fell off necessarily, but it was definitely slower. There were like a couple raids here and there. People were still talking about the game, but like everyone came out of the woodwork for this, and it's got some of the best level design. There's new songs in this, like multiple tracks that are just for this mission.
Is this exclusive to the latest DLC, or is it?
I, you know what? I'm not actually sure because it's accessible through a public event on IO. So I think technically no.
Okay.
But
who
don't
knows?
Quote me on that.
Yeah.
Because I do have the latest DLC and most of the people that I've been playing with do at this point. But it's really it's been amazing because it's so well designed. It's something that you need a fire team for, but you only need three, right? It's not like a raid where it's like hard, sometimes hard to get six people. But even then, we were having like three or four teams go out on the Waypoint Discord at a time to try to get this gun. It's difficult in the way that most Destiny content isn't, where it's less like your guns aren't good enough. It's more like you have to be good at making callouts and focus firing down the tougher enemies, that sort of thing. It's really, and it's got some, I know that Destiny's not a platforming game, but I actually think the platforming in this section, in this bit, is like very, very cool. Like, there's a lot of like very thin ledges that you're walking along. It's very like Vault of Glass.
The one thing that would get me into Destiny is like, platforming.
Totally. Actually, and like it's...
There's that one jump at Vault of Glass that is like a really cool jump, but also scary as hell.
Yes, exactly. It's like that puzzle. For it's the... Like, it's like that, but for like 15 minutes of like different rooms, and like the path forward isn't always like obvious. Like there's a lot of like poking in holes and being like, oh, where does that lead? And like the one of the coolest things about it is that once you get the gun once, a new version of the mission opens up on the map that you can access whenever without going through the public event.
Right.
That changes things week to week.
Oh, that's neat.
So like you can come back and like it'll also every week that you run through it, it powers up the gun even more.
Oh, wow.
So, like, you're, like, building on top of this gun. This gun is already broken, by the way. Whisperer of the Worm.
Okay, Whisperer of the Worm.
It's already, like, the gun is broken as hell, and it's going to be even more powerful if you keep coming back. It's basically a sniper rifle that, if you play Destiny 1 and you remember the Black Hammer from the Crota raid.
Black Spindle.
Black Spindle later.
Okay. Oh.
But so Black Hammer was three precision shots, and then you get a free magazine out of thin air. Just free bullets, as long as you're hitting precision shots.
Three headshots in a row, which, or three like, Vex body shots in a row, or whatever.
Which, like, if you're fighting a boss, that's all you're aiming for. That's all you're hitting anyways, right? So this is, like, about DPS. Black Spindle changed it so that it would pull that ammo from your reserves.
Right.
Whisper of the Worm goes back to the old way, the broken way, basically, like where you're getting free ammo forever.
Shooting a boss
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
And
why would I not use this all the time?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's it's going to be that gun where like everyone's going to break every but like we're at the point of this expansion where it's like it's time to break things, right? It's time to just have fun with it.
Right,
like
right.
Everyone's already hit.
Forsaken is going to hit
September
year,
7th or something.
And so at that point, that stuff is going to outclass everything in this anyway. So
there's actually so many systems changing that a lot of the guns are going to be left behind, not because you can't infuse them like old, like it's just because there's new perks. There's a new perk system, so like things just won't be as good because.
Full stop.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, but
I'm gonna try to hop back on for Forsaken probably, and need to decide. And I need to commit to actually getting there on PC probably, and like it's, actually being there. So
yeah.
I definitely thought you were doing a Black Metal Cats thing. When you first read that, I was like, oh, Black Metal Cats. Yeah, it's one of
Destiny
those.
Destiny Lore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Whisper of the Worm.
Zol,
Zol. That was also only half of the lore on that gun. So if you want to, you get the gun, you can read the rest of the lore.
The fact that they're doing like grimoire.
The physical book thing. That was all.
I'm not gonna buy it.
Please, no.
Too late.
Just put it.
Encyclopedia.
They're putting it in the game. I know.
Finally.
All right. That is going to do it for us. Today, Danielle, where can people find you on the internet?
At Danielle or I.
How about you, Natalie?
At Natalie Watson.
Ricardo, how about you?
At @A_Cotto_appears.
Follow me on Twitter at @Austin_Walker. You can follow Waypoint at twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/Waypoint Vice, youtube.com/Waypoint Vice, and over at twitch.tv/Waypoint. As always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that, waypoint.zone/BOEN. And as always, if you have questions, we didn't get to them today, but we will in the future, you can send those over to gaming@vice.com. All right. Let's face this week together. It's going to be another long one, but I hear there's thunderstorms. Hopefully it'll rain and cool things down a little bit.
Yeah. It already has a little bit.
It has a little bit. It has a little bit. Danielle, take us out.
All right, let's all hold hands and say, be good and
no
be good at it.
No one's
I meant metaphorically. All the listeners on the podcast.
Okay,
all
one more time. One more time.
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.